Okay, so now moving on to agenda paper 6. Craig?
Agenda paper 6 is about the sale of a single asset entity containing real estate. The main question in the submission is whether an entity applies IFRS 10 or IFRS 10 accounting for the sale of a single asset entity to a customer. It also asks follow-up questions depending on the outcome of the main question. The main facts of the submission are presented in paragraph 5 of the paper. We performed outreach on this request. The responses are summarised in paragraphs 11 to 17 of the paper. Paragraphs 20 to 26 of the paper contain our analysis of the main question in the submission. Our view, an entity applies IFRS 10 to the transaction described in the submission. 27 to 45 analyse the submitter's follow-up question based on this conclusion. The submitter asks why the entity presents the resulting gain or loss from the loss of control of a single asset entity on a gross or net basis. In our view, an entity does not split the gain or loss and present the component parts separately, i.e. it presents any gain or loss on a net basis. Question 1 on page 12 of the paper asks whether the committee agrees with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS 10 and IFRS 15 as summarised in paragraph 49 of the paper.
Right, who would like to talk about the analysis of the requirements and the standards to this question?
No objection.
When I first read the paper and the tentative agenda decision, I mean, I had questions which I asked to the staff and I understood the answers. And I had no specific issue that came to my mind specifically. But when I interacted with some people in France, including auditors, I was surprised by the reactions, actually. And they were more... some were of the feeling that answering the question via an agenda decision was probably not the best way to proceed, and they would have gone for standard setting, which I don't know exactly, but it is some of the comments I got from the jurisdiction where I'm from.
And that was because they thought the requirements weren't clear, or because they wished that the answer would be different?
No, because what they were saying is that, if my understanding is correct, first thing, because obviously it could cause a change in practice, not necessarily for real estate, but for other businesses, if I understood correctly, first thing. And second, they were more of the view that effectively, currently, you could read the two solutions in the standards. But honestly, I don't just deliver the comments, but I cannot explain more than that because I've not experienced.
I'm not trying to be mean to you. I'm just trying to understand that.
Yeah, sure. I did the maximum I could. I've not experienced such transactions. So not.
Okay, thank you. Tony.
Couple of thoughts. I understand the staff's analysis. I can see that's where the standard might lead you. I guess one observation is that a little while ago we talked about failed own use arrangements where there is a contract to deliver a commodity but for whatever reason fails own use. And I think we implied in the agenda decision that it will be possible to account for that both as a derivative during the period between entering the contract and delivering the commodity, and then also account for the delivery of the commodity. So we didn't say once a derivative in the scope of 9, always a derivative, and the only thing that happens is the settlement of that derivative. And I just wondered if there is something there that is worth exploring. And the reason that I say that is I can understand how you work through the guidance in the literature to get to the answer that is in the paper. I'm not convinced that it provides useful information. I think the issue is a little bit broader. I know that the paper answers the questions that we were asked, but the issue feels to me a bit broader because it's not just presentation, is it gross or net? The point at which the gain, whether it's gross or net, is recognised could be different, because obviously there isn't an overtime model in IFRS 10, and the variable consideration models are different, so the gain could be measured at a different amount depending on which standard you apply. And I think if an entity is undertaking these transactions in the ordinary course, I'm just not convinced that it's useful information to present a net gain. So, yes, I understand and don't disagree with the staff's analysis. I think my two points are, is there potentially another way to look at it, which is that there are two things going on here. There's a contract with the customer and the sale of a subsidiary. And if not, I wonder if we might pause and ask the board whether the board will consider standard setting, a bit like happened in the United States, where these transactions would not be in the scope of the sale of subsidiary guidance, they'd be in the scope of 606.
Okay, maybe, and if I could just comment on a couple of things that you've raised there. So, firstly, referred to the recent agenda decision on physically settled commodity contracts, and I think the slight difference between the situation there and the situation here for me would be that I hope that we were very careful in that agenda decision to make sure that we commented on the requirements as they applied to the specific transaction, and then we sort of said, you know, alluded to the fact that there were other bits that weren't covered by those specific requirements. I think similarly here, what the staff has done has applied the specific requirements. I just think that maybe there's more on-point specific requirements here that leave less open. So I think that's slightly different. And I think the other thing that I was going to say is I think that I was very careful with the way I worded my question when I opened up, which I know you noticed because you laughed. Because I think we need to separate what do we think the words say, and then if people think that maybe we should ask about whether that's something that should be flagged to the board, which we can talk about separately afterwards, I'd like to sort of separate those two pieces if we could.
That's fine. I think I take the first point, and my other remarks were an answer to a question you haven't asked.
It's more to flag for others. Bruce?
Thanks. I'm going to be careful not to steer into your area there. On the two questions, on question A, I agree. So, commenting on what you said, I agree with the wording where it got to in terms of the fact that we're in IFRS 10. But I'll tell you where my problem with it was, and I'm not trying to get into where Tony was a stand setting, but it leads to what I was with number two. If I tried to analogize to a business combination, in BizComs we try and draw away from the fact whether I've got a business that's in a legal entity or it's out of a legal entity, you can have a business combination because you're buying a business. Yet here, I'm drawing a very bright line and saying, whether you've got a single-use asset that's in a company or out of a company, you've kind of got completely different accounting. Now, the reason I have a challenge with that is because leading into B, I'm in the same boat of saying, but does this give me the best information? And I know we've analogized somewhere here to IS1 where it talks about incidental, but what if this is not incidental? I mean, what if this is what I do as a business? I just happen to be housing these things in individual companies for tax or whatever other reason it may be. Now, I'm in a situation where, well, that's what I'm doing. But because you're forcing me into IFRS 10, I'm not in a situation where I'm presenting a net And the reality is it should, what I really want to be presenting is a gross situation because I think it better reflects the economics of the transaction. The challenge that I've got with Part B is I'm not convinced that the wording is clear enough to make me do that. So I don't think that it's prescriptive enough when I read the actual words to say to me, you have to do, you cannot do this gross. Now, I know we've tried to analogize to some of the other standards, but I think that in some of the other standards, like where I'm selling an item of PP&E, that makes sense to me. I mean, I think we're happy that it reflects economics, that if this isn't what I'd ordinarily do, yes, I've got a one-line gain coming in. But I can see a situation where this is what I ordinarily do. It's not incidental to what my business is. I think under A, the wording gets me to IFRS 10, but then under B, I get a silly answer where I've got to disclose the net, and it's not really what I'd like to disclose. So do I think I could build an argument to show gross? I think somebody could, and it would be very interesting to see if somebody could challenge them on the wording and the standard if they decided to show gross.
But would you, maybe to just pick up on something Tony said, if you did present it gross, then would you be comfortable that it doesn't hit a normal revenue line? Does it hit an other revenue line?
And that's the part I think we'd need to unpack. So it's almost like I don't want to get into what the solution would be, because I think it would be... I think it may be revenue. I mean, if this isn't incidental to what I do, and it's actually exactly what I do, and it's the core of what I do, and it's all I do, potentially it could be a revenue line item. But I'm saying this is the kind of thing we'd need to unpack, and saying, are we forcing ourselves into the accounting in B because we're saying the answer is IFRS 10 and A?
I suppose I only ask that for some of the points that Tony made, that almost, I suppose, where we thought through is obviously two steps. Are you an IFRS 10? And then the second question that was asked. And obviously we analysed what we thought is in the words, particularly of B98, in terms of whether we thought it's, is there just a gain or loss that you work out whether to present, or is there any option to componentise? For the point that Tony made, if you start to get into almost componentise, then you almost start to make up, because then if you want to show a revenue number, it's not necessarily exactly the same as you would get if you were in IFRS 15, because of all the points he made about control, when control transfers, etc.
Which is why I step back and say, I don't want to get into Sue's later question, is do we think the answer to A is the right answer, given that we don't think it gives us the right answer in B?
Okay, sorry, I've been watching the order again, I'll go around. So, Guy?
I feel somewhat compelled to try and answer the two questions together, even though you've instructed us not to, and so I'm probably not going to obey the instruction.
You're announcing your intentions.
So, purely literally on the reading of the words in the standard, it's hard to take issue with how that's been analyzed. That seems to be the literal reading. And I would also say, in the vast majority of circumstances, that makes sense. You know, oftentimes a legal entity transaction as opposed to a direct transaction in the asset does have economic differences. And there are different accounting requirements to respond to what are typically economic differences in transactions. The bigger issue here, though, in my mind is, you know, one could envision scenarios where there really is no substantive economic difference at play between a direct transaction in the asset versus a transaction in an entity. And in those situations, which aren't defined in the words in the standard, one could certainly take significant issue with the quality of the information that the standards seem to produce in those circumstances. So there's, in that respect, considerable discomfort with the answer. But, you know, I think the literal reading of the words take you to that answer, and that answer is very sensible in the vast majority of cases, but where there really is no substantive economic difference between a transaction in the asset versus a transaction in the entity, it really is a troubling answer. It strikes me to deal with that, though, that is a standard setting issue that I would think warrants serious consideration in the circumstances.
Maybe to break my own rules and peek a little, make you feel more comfortable. I have a certain level of empathy for some of the comments about, you know, why does it make such a big difference just because it's in a legal entity versus not. But on the flip side, if I think back to my days on the staff way back in 2002 working on consolidation, there were a number of conversations at the time at the board table about really fundamental questions that come up just because you've got an entity versus when you haven't got an entity. And I remember the example that used to come up all of the time was the difference between a company, and it doesn't need to be a business, a company that owns a building. If I have an option over the company, I might end up consolidating the company and recognising the building, whereas if I just had an option over a building, I would never recognise the building just because of the option. And why was this difference? And I think in the end, the conclusion was just it makes a difference because there's an entity in the middle. And I think there's lots and lots of different situations where we get a different answer just because there's an entity in the middle. And this is, I think, one of potentially a whole load of different situations. And so I guess my hesitation in terms of starting to... If the committee decides it wants to suggest that to the board, that's, you know, the committee's right, obviously. But I guess my caution as a board member listening to that would be, how do we draw the line around when we think what types of transactions we need to start thinking about, you know, where we need to make differentiations in some cases versus others, and why, and how big a deal does this become? Because it doesn't feel like a little standard-setting thing to me.
So I would agree with that observation that, it, you know, it's easy to think, okay, this would be a quite a narrow surgical amendment to IFRS 10 try and identify something where there is no substantive economic difference. But yeah, you're right, it does have, one could then say, well, what about this, what about that? You know, the same problem exists in other standards such as the one you just articulated. I'm not sure that's a reason not to embark on this. It really is troubling that you know, something that's purely driven by form would drive drastically different accounting.
Yeah.
I agree, you know, in trying to determine when form matters and when it doesn't is something that we would need to define. But, you know, I think it's worth attempting to try and define it to be responsive to trying to produce useful information for transactions that are essentially economically the same.
I just, again, would just put up a note of caution as a board member that, you know, we've got a massive queue of things that we'd like to get to on the board, and we're trying to be very disciplined to make sure that we put resources and effort into the things that really need to be prioritised. I think any sort of suggestion to the board that we should be opening up something, it will be looked at in the context of many alternative uses of our time. So, just to flag that. Mikhail.
Yes, I will probably repeat all the arguments then, because I think this is a common situation in Sweden then, that construction companies are selling their construction, so buildings or properties through this legal entity, and that is in the ordinary course of business then. And of course they are in IFRS 15 with all the requirements and so on with all the operations and all the activities they perform. And then, okay, you should sell this to the customer. And when we discuss this in other cases, why it is important with the legal entity is because this changes the rights and liabilities of the parties. But if there is no change in the rights and liabilities, then I cannot see that the legal form should have an impact on how it should be accounted. So it should be substance over form instead of legal over substance when you apply this accounting. And of course that is due to facts and circumstances in the specific case.
Jim.
First of all, this fact pattern mentioned here is also common in China. I'm sorry that someone feed you with the not so correct information so that you put China in the not common category. But yeah, I did my research and I talked to many big firms in China. So yes, it's very common. And we have this very big and fast developing real estate developers using company wrapper or company shell to sell buildings. So it's just almost standard procedures. So it's just, I should say that. Sorry. On behalf of Chinese accounting standards, it's just societies. So you put that on top of, it won't change my answer here. So given the logic and the staff paper, I agree. That's what should end up with. But the previous comments about the substance over form and selling a building, whether it's a company wrapper or not. So it gives us the alternative on Appendix B, the U.S. GAAP approach. If we can't afford to defend ourselves with all the good reasons Sue just mentioned, a company is different than the building. The company could carry liabilities, could carry other things like licenses, operations, less than 100% transaction or ownership changing hands. So it's hard to define the boundary between what the U.S. GAAP is kicking back to the full kind of a exposure or the recognition of all items. So it's a hard choice. So if the board doesn't want to change the 10 and the 15, I'm fine with the current solution. It's a company. It's a company is a company. It's hard to define how much or which belongs to the newly or possibly issued exemption, which is not. We could stay that way. So we stay strong. If we cannot afford the attack, we will give them a very narrowly defined, just the asset with directly related tax, no further liabilities, no further licenses. You know, building could be easy to explain, but we have some other forms or industries. For example, the solar farms are similar. We have companies building solar farms. They're not buildings. They're or wind farms. They're heavily financed, and it's a heavy kind of capital concentrated, get changing hands. But those industries or assets are always or usually linked with licenses and operations. So it's hard to define. I'm saying that I'm fine with the current solution. Company wrapper is a company. Doesn't matter if it carries one building or has the tax benefit, liabilities, government licenses, or operations attached. We deal with, like the current rule says, as the IFRS 10. So you don't recognize. If we couldn't, we give a very narrowly defined exception to kick it back to the IFRS 15 so that the full revenue expense all just break out. So this is my suggestion. I'm fine with the current. If it's up to the board, since if we want to do a very narrowly defined change to the 10 and the 15 or the 10, similar to what the U.S. GAAP is doing, I'm fine with that.
Thank you.
So like others, I agree with the staff's technical analysis in terms of the applicability of IFRS 10. I think as the committee, we've try to be faithful to the concept that form does matter. I mean, in IFRS 11, we had that discussion, and most recently, IFRS 11 and 16, we had that discussion, and no sour grapes here, but... So I do think that I agree with the analysis. In terms of grossing up the net gain, the arguments I've heard are similar to what was discussed earlier, that the standards that refer to net gain presentation are in instances where the sale is incidental to the operations of the entity, whether it's sale of PP&E and under I-16, et cetera. This may be an instance where it's not incidental. It might be a significant revenue-generating activity. I find that hard to accept that argument. I think, as well, combined with the fact that even if you were to gross it up, as was mentioned earlier, you wouldn't get to the same answer you would under IFRS 15, given timing and measurement issues, et cetera. So, having said all that, just to foreshadow to question two, I won't belabor the point, but I feel quite strongly that I think this situation is much more common than we might think. And although the staff has crafted the agenda decision to be fairly arguably narrow in scope, where you've established a subsidiary some time before you enter into contract, I suspect people will look to that more broadly. And I'm aware of a number of jurisdictions where, for legal and other reasons, for example, with respect to sales of real estate, personal real estate, a non-resident cannot buy that real estate directly. You would have to do that through a corporation. Mm-hmm. And so as a real estate entity, you may have transactions with residents and non-residents, which this answer would give different would result in different items in the income statement, and the question is that useful if that is your primary business? So I think, as others have suggested, I think it's an important issue that should be flagged to the board.
Tom?
Yeah, thanks. Similar thoughts to Guys and Harhars and Mikael. Even I received a couple of feedbacks from stakeholders, regulators, standard setters. And the concerns are very similar to what Guy's pointed out. So I would prefer some kind of standard setting instead of an agenda decision as well.
Mary?
A couple of things that I just asked, an observation or two, but also something I'd ask for interpretation committee members as they're commenting. I think this is one of the instances in which it's very important to understand the difference between do you think that the technical analysis is correct or incorrect versus in light of that technical analysis, do you think that that there should be standard setting to change the requirements? Because I think most of the comments I've heard, I think Bruce is the exception, have been focused on, do I think the consequences is useful information, or what, have people really thought about it? It's not just gross versus net, it's, some of the other implications. And I think understanding whether you are raising an issue with how well IFRS 15 as it exists today functions is different from it's unclear what IFRS 15 says today. And now kind of be careful what you wish for territory. Sue had flagged a couple things, from past experience about the issue around wrappers. And I think if you're looking at this and questioning the usefulness of the information that results from saying entity is solely within IFRS 10, I think you have to think about whether you're questioning it on the it's different if it's ordinary course, or whether you're saying the wrapper is non-substantive and the economic similarity means it should be the same. And I think Sue's caution is more around the latter argument, because I think if people put these things into wrappers in part from risk management, tax and other, I think either if it's non-substantive, it wouldn't accomplish any of those reasons for putting it into the wrapper, and you know, and they wouldn't keep doing it. So if they're putting it in, they must think it has some effect. And I agree that we're drawing a dividing line, so that there is going to be some disconnect in terms of comparable economics but different accounting consequences. But I think it would be very difficult to encourage pursuit of here criteria or ways you assess whether or not a wrapper is non-substantive. So I wanted to distinguish that. It's not because I'm in favor of pursuing ordinary course, but I think you may want to, it would be helpful to hear which of those things is driving your thinking, the fact that it's ordinary course or the fact that you think the wrapper should be disregarded. Now, IFRS 10 does explicitly use the word entity. It doesn't use the word business. So the issues that we've had around IFRS 3 in terms of determining when something is a business, whether or not it has a legal entity wrapper, don't exist for IFRS 10. And you know, Sue was reflecting on just one instance of the impact that has. I think if what you're saying is the third alternative is consider whether IFRS 10 should be amended so that it focuses on business versus entity. I know, Bukavar, I am not advocating that, but think through, you know, what it is that you're saying. If you want to line up this analysis with IFRS 3, that would be quite a considerable change.
It would be, but if
you don't want to do that, then it means that you accept that IFRS 10 says that a legal entity packaging matters in terms of how you analyze the transaction. Yeah. So those are observations I want to make as well. I understand the frustration with why if I do this routinely by dropping things into a corporate wrapper, do I change the timing of my revenue recognition? Do I get some taxes, etc.? I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that the only thing that will ever be in there is the building. Because there will be other things. If you don't put in the insurance payments or other things, it will cause the substance of the wrapper to collapse, and it wouldn't work. So I think we are going to end up talking about things that may not be a business, but will be far more than a single asset just wrapped in a piece of paper that is a wrapper. So all of that grandstanding says, be careful what you wish for, but please, if you can separate your comments between, do I find fault, weakness, incompleteness about the analysis of the requirements of 15 versus I'm questioning the usefulness of that information, which is why it's maybe in addition to rather than instead of. You're looking for standard setting, and then what is the aspect that triggers you to say that about standard setting? It would be helpful to me.
Can I answer Mary's question?
Got Tony all primed up. Yeah, he's
great.
So it's lucky you're next.
No. I've already spoken. Maybe I get to.
That's okay. I think
Mary raises a very good point. I think Sue did as well. I was careful not to refer to substance in what I said, because I think if you're going to drop a building into a corporate wrapper because you don't pay stamp duty on the shares, that feels like substance to me. I don't think you're going to go and tell the stamp duty authority that corporate wrapper doesn't have substance. We've said in the context of our discussions around IFRS 11, not 5 years ago or whatever, that the existence of the corporate wrapper makes a difference to the substance. So my focus was very much on if an entity is selling these properties in the ordinary course, is it useful information for that entity to be applying IFRS 10 to determine when it recognises the gain, and to actually never have gross revenue and cost of sales. Yeah. So I think I was taking your point entirely. I think these things have substance, otherwise they wouldn't be done. But I question whether or not that's providing the users with useful information. I'll shut up now, Sue.
I wasn't wishing you to shut up. Bonnie?
Tony took what I was going to say. but I think as I read through the analysis and as I've listened to the conversation, I understand where the staff has got to, and I think I do agree, and I also agree that there have been numerous other occasions where we've said the existence of a legal entity, IFRS 11 being one of them, does make a difference. In the past, I don't know that I've necessarily agreed with that, but that is what IFRS says, regardless of whether or not I agree. That's a different issue. I think where I struggled a bit was when you have an entity that this is their main revenue-generating activity, and if you have some within a corporate wrapper and some not, you do get to two different answers, and that's where I wonder if it does make sense. So I kind of understand where Mary was getting to. I completely agree with what Tony was saying in terms of where I questioned the usefulness of the information.
Okay. Paul?
Like others, I have a hard time disputing the staff's analysis, although I don't believe that's the universal answer in practice. I think some are applying IFRS 15 and they're arguing for substance over form. I am troubled by going out with an agenda decision like this. I do think this needs some standard setting. I think if we go out with this, I think we can just title this Roadmap to Get Around IFRS 15. Because that's what we will see structuring transactions. To get around IFRS 15, whether it's because they've got a contract that they don't like the margin on, they've got a contract that's got variable consideration they want to get around, whatever. To answer, Mary, your question, I think for the most part, look, I believe today, yes, those wrappers, they have some substance to them, and I'm looking at this as more useful information. But I think tomorrow, when we issue this, we will see wrappers that don't have any tax consequences, no other consequences. It's just to put it into IFRS 10. Now, one might argue that, well, but this says this subsidiary was set up some time ago. Well, I'm not sure that matters for some of these other transactions, like in China, where I think some of those are set up while they're constructing that building. But nevertheless, our conclusion, that's the only time that's mentioned is in the first paragraph. Our conclusion is not dependent on this entity being set up some time ago. We don't make a distinction there. So I think people are just going to take this as, okay, I can set this up at any time, and now I'm in IFRS 10.
Well, the first paragraph of the TAD does say the entity established the subsidiary some time ago, sometime before it enters into the contract with the customer, which actually I had a question. Is that determinative? Is that significant to the analysis? Which may be so.
Yeah, and our conclusion is not dependent on that at all. It's just given as a fact.
We should almost consider taking that out, because you say if it's put there the day before I sell it is a different answer than some time ago.
If it doesn't,
I can explain if it's helpful. So I think it was an embedded part of the fact pattern that was sent to us. From our perspective, I think it was an important part of the fact pattern in the analysis.
It is or is not? It is.
It is. It is, because the fact that is sometime, before you've ever contemplated, but signed a contract with the customer, you've already, in this case, the entity's already decided it's a subsidiary, and you've already been applying IFRS 10, which at least that was the fact submitted to us, and that said to us, you're already in IFRS 10, so you're very much applying the words in IFRS 10 in terms of losing control. One paragraph in the paper, so paragraph 19, and obviously we just analysed that fact pattern. We're not saying about every other fact pattern possible, but at least in paragraph 19 of the paper, we just make it clear that we've only analysed that fact pattern. And for example, the for example we use there is, I'm not saying you would get to a different answer, but I think you could be in a different place if only at the time that you are effectively, I say, signing the contract with the customer, that some sort of corporate wrapper set up at that time. I'm not saying it would be a different answer, but that's certainly not part of what we analysed.
I think it would be important.
So it was an important piece of the agenda decision, I think, to have that spelled out. We did have in the conclusion in the transaction described, but we can certainly repeat about the fact that it was set up sometime before the...
I think making it clear that that was a critical part of the analysis. It's not clear.
I think we can certainly repeat the fact and the conclusion that can be easily done.
So Gary and Mary have both put up their cards in response to this. So Gary?
But I think, Ian.
I think we got to stick with IFRS 10 gives an answer, and it's a net position, in part for the reasons we're talking here. But if you really wanted gross treatment, you could transfer it out of the corporate wrapper an hour before you sell it, could you not? You know, but they exist for reasons. I mean, if you've got a mortgage debt on this building, it's probably tied to a legal entity. It's easier to unload the mortgage debt with it. There's all sorts of things that are pluses, minuses, and complications to this thing if we want to start going on. What if you've got, you know, there's probably some ancillary cash. You've talked about taxes. I mean, there's other stuff going on in these things, and I think this will very quickly get out of control if we go beyond the straight and narrow. That being said, Sterling, the entity established some time before it was. To me, again, I look at everything we write is, if I didn't want to do it, say, well, it's had one permanent thing. What if I did an hour before? You know, again, that's how I would read it. Well, some time ago must have been important. So I think the elaboration that why is that important, we should probably make someplace in the dialogue.
Can I address that? This might quickly get out of control. You may not like what we did in the U.S., but we did it relatively quickly. It's worked really well, and it hasn't gotten out of control. So there's a model there. Now, maybe you don't like the model, but there is a way to do it.
I was just going to ask, Bob, you had said in your remarks, not just now, but before about this, that you think instead of doing an agenda decision, there should be standard setting, because if this agenda decision were published, it would be a roadmap structuring. And I guess what I was questioning is whether you feel that this analysis has identified a loophole that exists today. Because I guess I just don't get why, if that's what the standard requires today, that somehow publishing it as an agenda decision, makes it different. It's a question of instead of versus, you know, whether you're advocating instead of versus in addition to.
So I didn't say I reject the agenda decision. I said I'm uncomfortable with issuing an agenda decision because of what it can lead to, but I can't stand against it because it is technically accurate. And by the way, it probably existed before IFRS 15. So it's just been all along.
And frankly, the fact that the U.S. had to do standard setting to take it out of 606, out of the equivalent of IFRS 15, also says to me that it's not a question of what the standard currently requires. But I was questioning you because I was getting the feeling that you thought that somehow the publication of an agenda decision would make a difference to what the current requirements are.
No,
that's all I was checking. Okay.
So I don't have any practical experience relating to such an issue with IFRS 10, but I have practical experience with such an issue relating to IFRS 11. So I'm not sure my comment will add a lot of clarity to the debate, but at the same time, what I can remark is that in IFRS 11, depending on the facts and circumstances, we have an entity, but it can be a joint venture, i.e. then the outcome would be single line item, or it can be a joint operation, and it won't be any longer a single line item. So while I was reading the paper, I was thinking of IFRS 11, and I was saying, yeah, even though I understand technically the outcome using the current words in IFRS 10, I was saying, but why is there not a similar accounting as in IFRS 11? And so then it would go for what some have expressed, standard setting, actually, to just... So I'm not saying we should align to US GAAP, but what I'm saying is that there is a model that is currently existing in IFRS, which is IFRS 11, and depending on the facts and circumstances, a single asset entity can be a joint venture or can be a joint operation.
and the outcome, the accounting outcome, is not the same.
Martin.
Yeah, what do people expect and what do people get? And I guess we have some other examples within accounting where, probably unfortunately, or for good reasons, the accounting outcome is different than what people would expect. If I go through that technically, this paragraph 5C or 5S15 is pretty clear. With regard to IFRS 11, yes, for sure, we have an exception, but this exception is clearly based on the ground of the standards. And IFRS 11 discusses quite detailed what is other facts and circumstances and how to deal with that. And even there, we had application issues, which forces us to a longer non-agenda decision. With regard to the corporate whopper, I mean, if I think in terms of, as already said, deferred taxes or currency recycling, if that is probably in a different currency, how to deal with all that follow-up questions? And as we've learned, there is a difference economic substance in general if you put a legal entity around the structure versus when you just have the single asset. In other areas like cash and cash equivalents, we have a constant debate what is the right exact boundary, whether you are in cash and cash equivalents or whether you are in other short-term assets. With regard to IFRS 5, we have seen some boundaries of the standard that not in all cases it is a perfect economic fit. So my summary would be, if we really want to change that, we need to enter into standard setting. However, that's quite easy, quite complicated, and it's really hard to keep it narrow. What is the alternative? We are sometimes discussing a lot about alternative performance measures, and if it is that important for the company, I would have assumed that also in the past, companies dealing with that, they might have used alternative performance measures to illustrate potential effects. For sure, that it's not the best solution for a standard setter to end up in such a situation. But at least for the companies affected, for the meanwhile, it is a kind of way out.
Thank you, Martin. Andrew.
Let me answer the first question of the staff analysis. I think the staff have got the analysis of what the standard says right, that it is where you're driven for these structures, and that's how the accounting works. On the other parts of it, I'll try and be reasonably brief. First of all, I don't think it gives useful information if you have economically very similar or near identical transactions giving radically different answers in the financial statements. I don't think it's useful information. I don't think it's helpful for users of financial statements. On the point that's been touched on, I do think there's a number of companies at the moment take a substance approach and account under IFRS 15. That's where they are just now. In terms of does it make a difference and when something goes in a corporate wrapper, I think it does. If I were selling a building that I was constructing and that's in the overtime model and it goes into a corporate wrapper at the last minute, then I've got revenue over time under IFRS 15 and then it disappears down a hole into IFRS 10. I don't quite like that and I haven't thought it through and all the consequences, but I think it could get a difference. In terms of the solutions, I understand the points in alternative performance measures. I don't think it's a particularly helpful outcome. I don't think it's very good from a standard setting point of view if people feel they've got to put completely different numbers in their financial statements from those that the accounting standards give. So I wouldn't really want to go there. But I would come back to a point that Sue raised right up at the start, which is when you've got a business, it doesn't matter whether that business is in a corporate wrapper or not. you get business combination accounting. And it seems to me that the way potentially to deal with this, which might be very similar to the US approach, is to say, if you've got something you're selling in the ordinary course of business to a customer as defined in IFRS 15, because it's defined quite carefully, then you get the same answer regardless of whether it's a wrapper or not. And I don't think that would be a particularly troublesome bit of standard setting, and I think it could solve the problem very quickly.
Young Sue?
My thought is almost the same as the others. In terms of the technical analysis, I agree with the staff. Once IFRS 10 is applied, IFRS 10 should be applied always. So I'm agree with that. But you know, in terms of the substance of the transaction, and especially if the transaction is a part of the ordinary business, I think what the company is selling is not equity interest, but inventory sold. So the inventory sold, IFRS 15 is the proper standard to represent the economic substance of the transaction. This kind of business is getting popularity. Jim said that it's very popular in China, and Korea is getting popularity also. I just saw one example of that. And once this agenda decision is published, then many companies are going to have a form of this kind of business. So it's going to get in popularity very fast. So we have to think about it. But you know, what I'm worrying about is not much about the structuring or corporate wrapping, but instead, what I'm worrying about is how to present the economic substance of this transaction properly in the financial. So what I'm trying to say is that if this business is getting popular, and if economic substance is not what IFRS 10 presents, we have to think about the possibility of standard setting right now.
Anton?
We think that it's important that the economic substance is reflected in the financial statements. There was a discussion how this worked under IAS 8. And IS 11. In WCS, we discussed at least two cases, building a solar park, building a construction of a windmill park. And in those cases, IS 18 and IS 11 were applied. And I think the difference between IFRS 15 and IS 18 is in IFRS 15, it's clearly stated that when it is under IFRS 10, you cannot apply IFRS 15, and that provision was not there under IS 18.
Gary?
Yeah. Just one or two quick comments. I don't want to belabor the point. We've been on it. If you're selling something in a corporate wrapper, you get a net treatment, some type of gain. If you wanted IFRS 15 revenue, you could, in fact, transfer it out of there just before the sale and becomes part of the parent company to sell as an asset. So you ask yourself the questions of economic substance. Well, I'm going to tell you, a contract for the sale of an asset looks and reads nothing like the contract for the sale of securities or the capital stock. The reason why is they're different transactions in terms of, maybe not in terms of the physics of the building moving from one owner to another, but all the other things that come around with a legal entity go with it. So maybe it's not a perfect analogy for the same economic transaction, but I think there's sufficient enough differences typically for an asset sale versus a stock sale. And if you could move it out of the wrapper and get gross revenue, and you sit there and ask those questions, why wouldn't you? Why would you sell the stock or leave in the wrapper? And the answer is because it's different enough for the totality of the decision making of the selling entity. So again, not perhaps perfect and not well fully developed, but there is a difference. So I think the IFRS 10 probably has the essence of the answer without making this a vastly bigger project if you went to standard setting.
I want to try and wrap this up in a minute, but Michael?
Thanks. A couple of observations. Doesn't really affect my sector, but I agree with staff analysis, and I don't see any other answer you can get. I don't really see you could gross up or anything else. I think that's right. In terms then of is it the right answer, I'm broadly line with the people who think it doesn't reflect the substance. And I guess to one of Mary's points, I think you could potentially go down the route that Andrew suggested, or you might just say that, well, on the acquisition side, IFRS 10 always applies if we've got a subsidiary that we consolidate, but we treat the acquisition of assets or collections of things that aren't a business differently from a business. So on the disposal side, you could treat disposals of businesses different from disposals of non-businesses, potentially. It might be one route. Or you could say it's about customers, and that's the key factor that distinguishes it. But there might be a way of doing something. And then just to respond quickly to something that Gary was just saying, I guess this is part of the problem, isn't it, that corporate wrappers are important, except that when you do consolidate accounts, you ignore them until suddenly they pop up when you're trying to sell something with the wrapper around it, and that's why we've got this problem, I think.
Andrew, and then we'll wrap up.
Sure. Just to respond to a point that Gary made about the potential to transfer out of a wrapper just before a sale, my experience is that in many cases, if you did that, you would lose all the tax advantages immediately.
That's why they're different. That's the economic difference between them. That's the point. And I agree with you, by the way.
Yeah.
But they're different.
I agree that they're different. But when the whole substantive reason for having it in a wrapper in the first place is to save 10% of tax so that you can sell properties at a competitive price, that's all it's there for. You are getting very close to, you're actually just selling the asset inside, even though you've got to sell the securities. But we'll go around in the circle on this one, so I'll stop there.
So, let's take it offline, because I don't agree with your last comment, but it's not central to...
I understand.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest two things and see how you react. So I think other than Bruce, most people seem to agree with the technical analysis, if I can describe it that way, that's in the staff paper. But many people would prefer that the outcome could be different and think it would be good for the board to consider standard setting. So my suggestion is that we go for a show of hands to see whether the committee can support issuing the agenda decision based on the analysis in the paper, and in addition to that, that we ask the board to, if the committee wants to consider whether we should do some narrow scope standard setting to address the types of fact patterns, perhaps something along the lines of what has been done under US GAAP. And the reason why I would like to suggest that we do those two things simultaneously, which in a way can seem a little bit inconsistent with the idea of issuing an agenda decision, is for a couple of reasons. One is because a number of you have made the comment that people aren't necessarily doing what's in this paper on the basis that, on a substance over form basis, they think another answer is a better answer. On the surface, that sounds lovely, because who can argue with people accounting for substance? But I think when you've got similar substance is sort of in the eye of the beholder. And I wonder if I ask you all individually to write down on a piece of paper when the substance is the same, whether we'd get to the same answer. So people might be doing things which I think are lovely, but they may not be doing things that I think are lovely, and they may all be doing inconsistent things. So I'd rather we were clear on what the requirements are, and then ask the board whether they would like, or would like the committee to work with the board to come up with something specific that would move us away from this existing answer. The other reason why I'd like to see if the committee can support a tentative agenda decision is that I think it gets very tricky for the relationship and the efficiency of the relationship between the committee and the board if we try not to issue an agenda decisions, even though the committee has concluded that this is what the words mean, because we don't like the answer, and then we want the board to do something, because then if the board says, actually, when I look at the bigger picture, actually, we don't think that we should be putting time and energy as an organisation into this, then we get this awful situation where the committee says, well, I don't like the answer, so I don't want to issue an agenda decision. And to Mary's point, just by not putting in an agenda decision doesn't make the requirements go away. And so I would rather that we were clear if we think that is, if the committee agrees with the technical analysis, but also that we flag to the board that if the committee shows show of hands substantiates my guess, that many think that something perhaps should be done on a targeted basis to address this issue.
Can I just make one comment? Sorry, as the outlier on this, my objection is I agree with the analysis on question one. My concern, and I don't think this has been picked up in what we're saying, is that I think people are going to use the fact that they, like me, wouldn't read the presentation requirements as strictly to kind of, if they're not building a substance argument, to build a gross NAD argument.
So you're arguing just about the gross NAD.
So I'm saying I agree with question one completely. I'm saying I don't think question part B is so prescriptive that if I wanted to gross it out, and that's a question, is it revenue or not? And I said, I don't want to get into that. But I think that I still think on question two, somebody could build an argument to gross it out, and in fact, the wording is not clear enough.
But you wouldn't move into IFRS 15 for, let's say, overtime?
No, not at all. So I agreed with question one. Question two, I just don't think the wording is that prescriptive. So just seeing where my view.
Just one comment. We had talked about clarifying that the second sentence of the first paragraph, the entity established the subsidiary sometime before it enters into the contract. Are you suggesting that when we vote on the tentative agenda decision, it includes that modification?
So what I think we vote on is we're keeping the first paragraph as is, and down at the very bottom of page 14, when we comment on the transaction described and the entity losing control, we will repeat that phrase sort of in the conclusion then to make sure it's clear that we're talking about a subsidiary that was, you know, established some time before entering into the contract with the customer.
Just, thank you.
So with that clarification, can I get... So I'm going to ask you two questions. The first will be whether you support the agenda decision with that clarification that Bonnie just confirmed with Katrina, without further adjusting question two, in the first instance at least. And then I'll ask you a second question about whether you also want us to flag to the board a desire to look at some narrow scope standard setting to address this issue. Okay, so firstly, the agenda decision. Could I see a show of hands, please?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So the rest of you don't think that the requirements are clear, because I didn't hear anybody other than Bruce comment on that. Is that why your hands aren't up? Because that's the question I'm asking you.
I experienced reading B98. It wasn't that clear to me when I was reading.
So I don't have a majority of the committee who agree that the technical requirements and the standard are as analysed by the staff.
Should we break that up into question one and two?
Okay. Question one first. Yeah. Question one, show of hands, who can support the technical analysis?
Question one is the diagnosis. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Okay, and then question two. So this is the gross versus net. Show of hands.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So does question two. That's what you're doing. So can I get a show of hands, and I'll make sure I ask the specific question. So can I get a show of hands from the committee on who would support the agenda decision if it just covers the analysis in question one?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
If you don't like the answer, that's not the basis for us for an agenda this morning.
Oh, question two is not clear.
So what question? I just asked them whether they would support an agenda decision that just covers question one.
Okay. That's what I did. Sorry, that's what I thought.
And despite 10 people agreeing with the technical analysis, 6 people voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that Sue has brought up with us, because if we think back to the cryptocurrency question, there were many people, well, there were some people around the table that didn't like the answer, but the point was that this is what the standards say, and I think that's what we're confronted with here again, and what we've heard with the committee today is people saying they agree with the analysis. And so what Sue's trying to get us to do, or get you to as a committee, is follow the process, which is if you agree with that's what the standard says, that's why an agenda decision is appropriate. What you're hesitating over is you don't like the answer, and it was, the board went through that on cryptocurrencies as well, and then you have to make the decision, is standard setting required? But I think what Sue's trying to do is break it up into these different stages.
Well, I was trying to prevent the, what I'm trying to do is prevent the risk that I think that when this committee is helpful is when we can help answer questions in the market. Mm-hmm. When the committee is less helpful is where we can't conclude on things, and we've been criticised on that a lot in the past. So we're trying to get away from that by being more disciplined with our processes and our thoughts. My worry is that if we don't issue an agenda decision today, many of you, I think, are not voting for the agenda decision. Just on question one, let's focus on that for a moment, even though you agree with the technical analysis, because you want us to talk to the board and see if the board will do standard setting. But if the board decides not to do standard setting, we're now going to be left with a situation where we're going to have no answer for this question, and people are going to be making their own view on substance over form.
So can I make a third proposal? Can we see if there's support for what I've proposed in saying question one, I think, tells us an IFRS 10, question two is not prescriptive enough as to how it needs to be presented?
That's what I'm saying.
So can we vote
specifically
on
just on question
one? No, we asked on whether we'd support question one only.
That's what I did.
I'm saying we say question one, but we also answer question two and saying we do not believe question two is as prescriptive. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying we answer question two, but that we change it to state that we do not believe there's prescriptive enough to prevent a company from doing something, providing they've shown it in P&L. Yeah. That's what we haven't voted on. I'm saying we're answering the question as asked. We're just saying, and we've said it before, we've said things we don't believe are as prescriptive as they need to be.
But I'm not sure that that's an analysis the staff would even support in the first instance.
Yeah. I suppose I'm wondering how that's better than just going out with an answer to question one, because I know we haven't. I understand, Bruce, you've explained why you...
To answer what we were asked, as
you think we'll get to question two, but we haven't discussed what the other possible readings are of question two, and I suppose almost my worry is if we go out with something explicit in question two that kind of says we're saying there's no answer on question two, it's almost like we're driving even more to people potentially coming up with some sort of componentisation that then is not about linking to revenue recognition as if you'd applied IFRS 15.
We've done it before. We've said we don't believe the stance as clear.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So you picked up on a subtlety which I was missing, which is that some people may not want to just comment on question one, but they may want to comment on question two, but to reach a different conclusion to the staff. Now, I'm not averse to that. I think, though, that my preference, if we're going to do that, would be to work on what we think the words on question two would be to limit for damage limitation purposes, because we haven't looked at it with that sort of view when we've drafted the agenda decision. So if I could, Tony and Andrew, do you want to add something? Because otherwise what I will do is get the committee to vote on working toward an agenda decision, a tentative agenda decision that gives the answer as in the analysis for question one, but that we would bring back at a subsequent meeting probably analysis on question two for the committee to discuss, but that would be what we would be working toward. Okay? Because I'd missed that subtlety, so thank you for that. Tony, Andrew, did you want to add something before we vote on that?
Not to that, no.
Andrew?
It wasn't that so much as... I'm just circling back onto the timing. So we would issue a tentative agenda decision from this meeting?
No.
Not under this.
We'd bring
most
a paper
recent.
Back to a subsequent meeting to work on what the tentative agenda decision would look like. Okay. So we wouldn't be opining on it, voting on it today. Oh, sorry, we'd be giving a directional vote that this was what you want the staff to work on, but we'd bring back the actual words to vote on at a subsequent meeting.
Right. And in the meantime, at the same time as that,
we can send it. We can send a message to the board simultaneously. Okay. Also, I've got a bit of a challenge that I'll have different heads on at the table for counting for next time. But we'll set that aside.
For everything will be easier then.
So. I'm not confident of that. Okay, so could I then get a show of hands from the committee for those who would support us taking this away again and coming back with an analysis where we confirm the analysis in question one, as in the paper, but we look again at question two, taking into consideration the comments that have been raised, and look at what the requirements are and how we might refocus on question two to pick up the point that Bruce has been raising. I'm not going to say anything more specific now, but hopefully everybody generally understands what I'm saying. And if I don't do what I promised, you can not support it next time. But as a direction of travel, can I see a show of hands for that, please?
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
11, OK. And just for confirmation, I don't think I've asked this yet, a show of hands for those who want us to report back to the board a desire to look at whether we should do something narrow scope to address the type of question.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
OK, thank you. Sorry if you're getting grumpy. OK. Break time, but OK, we'll pick up. Paper 7.